I'm off the thing. So we're trying, this is a new phone and we're recording and I think it works. And I just want to say a few words. It's Wednesday night, the 27th of September. And 9 years ago on a Saturday down in Hull, I started these meetings. I had no idea how to do it. I had to figure out, learn and study the book. And I used to have my notebooks. I was going to bring them all in today. I had about 9, 10 spirals, and I had notes, and I studied, and you know, I'm filled with gratitude that I was able to do this. You know, I had a lack of low self-esteem my whole life. You would think, well, you know, somebody went to medical school and all these degrees and all these honors and all that. But you know, the lack of self-esteem that I had starting in early childhood persisted, and I always wanted approval. And I was always worried what people think. And I lived my whole life like that, seeking things out there to be okay. And today I'm okay. And I feel like doing this meeting, when you do service like this, I didn't do it so it's anything to do with me, but you get a feeling of self-esteem you can't explain. I think that's what the big book tries to explain, that when you're working with others, and when you're working with service to God and others, nothing can replace the feelings you get. And so I was just thinking about today, the only person who probably understands the commitment is my wife. You know, she's Xeroxing all the handouts through the years, and she knows how I always made sure the room was open, I was here. I always had the a plan, tried to be prepared, and it really was quite an experience. And so I was just thinking about that 9 years. And this Saturday, we're going to finish the book for the ninth time. We're in our ninth time on the other two nights, and about 1,200 meetings of the big book. And we started the site, and it's been up. Chris has made some wonderful changes to search for the episodes. I'm not sure I completely understand them yet, but he just put them up. And we have 80 episodes, and I've numbered them, starting with one on each night. We have the Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and it's year one, episode one. It follows the book, and you can search by the tags at the bottom for steps. You can search by steps, chapter, or night. And I think he set it up so that there are 30 on the front page, and you can search those. And then at the bottom, it's full archive search. You can search for the others. Is that right, Chris, to finally understand it? And it's good, he's done a lot of work, and let's give him a hand. For what we're paying him, I was getting frustrated trying to figure it out. My wife says, now, for what you're paying him, he's done a very good job. And it's a form of service, and I talked to Chris when we set it up. I said, this is the way you're gonna serve people. And yeah, don't worry, wives are really good at putting you in your place. And so we have the site now, and I've written quite a few thoughts on recovery, and I think we have it so that if a person wants to study the book, go through, listen to the podcast, they're there. I changed the title so it's not like Step 5, page, Into Action, page 38. It's Step 5, Fruits of the Fifth Step. I put the title of what you're actually recovering in it, so that it'll be more interesting to people who want to find particular information when you scan it. Tonight, I thought about it, and today, tonight we're going to do from the 12 and 12. Now, Joe and Charlie didn't like the 12 and 12, so of course I didn't like the 12 and 12. Now, they didn't say they didn't like it. They said that they see people trying to work the 12 steps out of it, and it wasn't designed for that. And so I have a good friend, Bruce from Minnesota. He's probably going to listen to this. So we talked about the 12 and 12, and I see it for what it is. It was written in 1953. It was not written in 1939 like the big book. It was not meant to be a textbook on the steps. Bill W. at that time was like the rest of us. He was sober, but he was struggling with emotional sobriety. And he wrote his essays on the steps, try to where he was and how he sees the steps in his struggle to be at peace with his life. And if you look at it in that regard, it's very good information. There are people who heard we were doing a step study here and they bring the 12 and 12. It's good, but it doesn't have the instructions. It doesn't replace the big book. It never meant to be. And he wrote the 12 and 12 mainly to do the traditions, because the traditions are why we're all here tonight. Because we have traditions that give us guidance on how we work as an organization, or we would never have existed. And I may need some coffee. Somebody can get me a little coffee. My throat's getting dry. Of course, it'll be your wish. I'll stop talking. He decided that to help sell the book, he would write essays on the 12 steps. And there's some powerful stuff in here that has changed my life. And we're on the 10th step on the Wednesday night meeting. Thanks, Lo. And we're going to cover, I copied the whole chapter, but we're just going to cover two pages. And these two pages, remember, step 10 is how you live every day in the now. It's how you stay at peace during the day, inventorying during the day, watching for self coming out as anger, resentment, fear, self-centeredness, dishonesty, irritable, restless, discontented, so you can stop right then during the day and connect back to God and be in the world of the Spirit. The whole goal of AA is to be in the world of the Spirit. The world of the Spirit is where God is. And people talked about their relationship with God. If you're not in the world of the Spirit, you're in the world of whatever your name is. And that's the world where you're either in the past or the future. You're not in the now. I heard somebody say that when they came to AA, they didn't realize how crowded it was at the center of the universe. I don't know if anybody can recognize. It was very crowded. And there are a lot of people in the center fighting to be the center. And so we're going to look at this, what he wrote about the step 10. Now, I can't help myself, but last Wednesday, I did the 10th step here, and it's on the podcast. It went up today, and I talked about the world of the Spirit, and I think it's really the best one I've ever done, on page 84 on that paragraph, and we went through it. And so if you can listen to that. And to continue that on how we inventory during the day, he says, as we work the first 9 steps, we prepare ourselves for the adventure of a new life. The first 9 steps, and I was listening to Chuck Chamberlain today from New Paragraphs, he said, that's where we destroy our self-centeredness enough so that we can feel contact with God. And then he says, we enter step 10, we're going to put our AA living to practical use. We're going to see how we can use it. Now, if the program isn't of practical use each day, then what's the point of all this? And we need a program we can use each day so we don't get too off the beam, because if we're off the beam, we're separated from God. And what happens if you're separated from God? You have no power not to drink. And it says, here comes the acid test. Can I stay sober and also keep an emotional balance and live the good purpose under all conditions? Page 88, the front page. Everybody got it? So staying sober is good, and we celebrate that. But like Russell S. says when he gives his talk, you know, you can be a rapist or serial killer and be on death row, but if you got 25 years, he says, we say, come on down and get a coin. And he's being facetious, but we celebrate. It was funny. We celebrate physical sobriety, but we don't always celebrate emotional sobriety. And without emotional sobriety, what's the point of it all? See, if you're physically sober, but you're not emotionally sober, you're living with alcoholism. And how does that feel? Doesn't feel good. So the step 10 is where we're going to look all day when we get an emotional imbalance and see if we can get back on track. He says, a continuous look at our assets and liabilities, a real desire to learn and grow are the necessities for us. And we learned to look at that in steps 4 through 9. He says, we've learned this the hard way. He says, for the wise have always known that no one can make much of his life until self-searching becomes a regular habit. Not necessarily beating on yourself, but searching yourself, looking how things are going, what are your motives, who's running your life, who's driving your car. And it says, until he is able to admit and accept what he finds. That's the key. Can I admit and accept what I find each day, throughout the day? Can I accept what's happening and admit my powerless over it? And then say the serenity prayer, what do I change and what do I accept? Until it patiently, persistently tries to correct what is wrong. Now, I read the 10th step and I misunderstood it for years. Of course, I hadn't worked the steps. This was a long time ago, but I thought, well, I just go around and apologize all day long. But to me, it's your wrong thinking. It's the wrong thinking that gets you out of into an emotional imbalance that we want to inventory all day long. It says we watch on page 84 for what? Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear of the big book. When these crop up, not if. And crop up. You watch with God. You don't want them to be harvested. Harvest is when you're screaming and yelling and sending the email. Crop up is when you're starting to get a little bit perturbed. And you ask God at once to remove them. We talked about that last week. And so seeing what's wrong is admitting what's wrong in my thinking all day long. Because if I don't admit it's wrong, then I think it's true, and then I act on it. And I said to set aside a prayer tonight. Why? Because a lot of times I thought my old ideas were true. And I acted on them, and they weren't. They were always wrong. It says, when a drunk has a terrific hangover, anybody remember those? Mm-hmm. He cannot live well today, but there's another kind of hangover which we all experience, whether drinking or not. This is the emotional hangover, the direct result of yesterday's and sometimes today's excesses of negative emotion. So what's wrong is anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. These excesses of negative emotion. If we would live serenely today and tomorrow, anybody want to do that? We have to eliminate these hangovers. So to eliminate the hangover from the day night before, I have to look each day during the day so I don't get drunk. Then I won't have a hangover, so I don't get drunk emotionally. Does this make sense? And it says, it requires an admission of correction of errors now. So the 10th step is an inventory now. Why is now important? Because God's in the now. And if I'm not in the now with God, I'm back with me. And I heard something, it made a lot of sense to me after a while. I had to think about it because, you know, I'm an alcoholic. But this lady said, the lady wrote the Freedom from Bondage chapter that everybody quotes on praying for people you resent. She said that alcoholics don't live in ongoing time. What they do is they take the now and they move it into the past and the future. And they live out there and they're not in here. Think about that. He says, what AA and the steps do is get us to bring us from back out here, back here. And all day long, we're using step 10 to stay in the now. We had Andrew, who used to come on Wednesday nights from New York. He lived in Manhattan. He came years ago. And he used to say that we're like a Boeing 747, that when we take off, we're off course immediately. And we correct the whole trip. They're correcting the plane to stay on course. And a funny story about Andrew is that he lived in Manhattan his whole life. And he came here and he was a consultant for Blue Cross. And he got a car. And he came to the meeting and he said, you know, I drove a mile and I didn't have to stop. He'd never done that in his whole life. So, you know, think of people don't like Kansas. Well, there you go. All right, I'm getting off track. All right, it says when an inventory is done, we make peace with ourselves, isn't that what we want? And then tomorrow's challenges can be met. Now, in the 11th step, which we're going to look on page 86, it talks about the nightly review. And he says, although all inventories are alike, the time factor does distinguish. He's talking about the spot check inventory. Whenever we find ourselves getting tangled up, so that's what we're talking about. And then he says that you can have annual or semi-annual house cleanings you can do. But we're talking about the inventory all day long. Now, I really believe if I inventory all day long and I do my nightly review, theoretically I shouldn't be carrying around a lot that I need to do a major four step. But occasionally you'll still have some things you haven't settled and then you have to write them down, you discuss them with your sponsor. It says, are these joy killers? Whilst we spend all our waking hours drearily rehashing our sins? He says the emphasis on inventory is heavy only because many of us have never really acquired the habit of accurate self-appraisal. So what you're doing is you're doing step 4 and 5 all day long. and you want to make accurate appraisal of what you see, of what you're reacting to, so you're reacting appropriately and not inappropriately. Now, the problem with alcoholics is we have a way of seeing things wrong, and then we act on it, we don't even stop. So the way we could start to see that we see things wrong is we're starting to get out of kilter. We're starting to get bothered. Anybody get bothered? Anybody start judging? Anybody get irritable? Anybody get anxious? Anybody worry? No, I'm sure not in AA. And so he's going to look at the spot check inventory on page 90. Now here's this next four paragraphs have changed my life. And that's the power of spiritual. You can change, you can see things. And it's true. This is true for me. I don't know if it's true for you. It's a spiritual axiom. That means truth. That every time I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. Now, I went to meetings for a long time, and when I read it's a spiritual axiom that every time we're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with them. Anybody ever read it that way? Well, all that did was make my life a mess. And that's the way I saw things before I came in here. But, you know, it's true. This is a truth. Now, you may not believe it, but if you're disturbed, there's something wrong with you. Now, what's wrong with you if you're disturbed? Well, first of all, why is disturbed bad? Disturbed means separated from God. It means you've blocked God. Now, we've learned in the third, fourth, fifth, through ninth step that that's bad. And we learn in step four about the things that are blocking us from God. So we're now looking all day long at the things that are blocking us from God when they crop up. And we inventory resentment, right? Fear, and we inventory harms done to others in our fourth step. So basically, there's something wrong with me when I'm disturbed. Now, I like to quote this, and I heard this speaker, Hector, and I was listening to this, and I said, wow. He said, the only thing lacking in every situation is the love I don't bring into it. And I said, wow. And when it means I'm disturbed, it means I'm not seeing it through unconditional love like God would see it. And it says on page 84, love and tolerance is our code. Anybody think that's a good idea? Anybody want to do that? Good. But if you're disturbed, that's not your code right then. You're not practicing love and tolerance. You're practicing anger and intolerance. And when you practice that, the results that I've looked at in my life is I take bad actions and I harm myself and others. So being disturbed is not good. Now, you like the acceptance chapter? Everybody loves the quote. Acceptance is the, I can't even remember, answer the of all my problems. Well, you know, it's not true because we have the serenity prayer, right? Why would he have the serenity prayer if he have courage to change? But what he meant was accepting every situation as it is, and it is. And like Sandy Beach says, the deal is to see everything as a situation that is, not putting a label on it, not good or bad, but what has actually happened. And I had somebody call me, they were disturbed the other day because they saw something and they got themselves all worked up, which is normal for alcoholics, but it was because they were seeing it the way they saw it and it wasn't as it is. And if you look and you look at your fourth step and you see all the things you got angry about and what actually was, you realize how crazy we've been. So we wouldn't get disturbed if we accepted everything as it is. Disturbed means that I've put a label on something and I don't like it. And says, it's something wrong with me and what's wrong with me is I'm disturbed. And if I'm disturbed, I'm blocked with God. And really what's wrong with me is I'm back in the self. Remember our chart that we had on Sunday? Did anybody like that? Did it help? It's brilliant, it's from Joe and Charlie. They show self in the center and your instincts of life up here and the wrongs that are manifested, resentment, fear, and harms to others. And if self's in the center, I'm going to see these manifestations. So all it means is I'm back to self-centered. God's not controlling my life. I'm running the show. And I know it's not going to work. So if I, anytime I get bothered, I have to say, okay, I'm the problem. It doesn't matter what's going on now. It's a problem because of the way I'm looking at it. Now it says, if somebody hurts us and we're sore, we are in the wrong also. Now why is it always wrong to be angry? I said that once and somebody pounded the table and said, it's not always wrong. That was quite a meeting, by the way. We were talking about anger. Wednesday night down there at the other, that's the same time that they stormed down the room after they pounded on the thing. And so they don't get it. Why is anger always wrong? Because it blocks you from God. It shuts you from the sunlight of the Spirit. Anger is futile. And we're going to be looking at that on the fourth step when we read those pages on Sunday night. So it says, well, what about justifiable anger? Did anybody ever come in here and not have justified anger? Yeah, it says somebody cheats us. Aren't we entitled to be mad? Can't we be properly angry with self-righteous folk? For all of us, these are dangerous exceptions. We have found that justified anger ought to be left to those better qualified to handle it. Now, it doesn't mean that you excuse people's behavior, but you don't have to react to it and let it control you. You could say the Serenity Prayer and say, God, this is the situation. What do I accept? What do I need to change? What can I do about the situation? So you see it from a place of peace and not disturbed. Remember when page 87 it says, if we're agitated or doubtful, remember, we pause. Anybody remember to do that? Everybody remembers the phrase, but a lot of us forget to pause. We pause and we ask God to give us the right thought or direction. So what we're learning is how we pause when we start getting, and we don't get disturbed. We pause and we ask God, how do I see it differently? So it says, few people have been more victimized by resentments than we alcoholics. Anybody believe that? It matters little whether our resentments are justified or not. So in other words, you can't blame people anymore if you're disturbed. It's not their fault, it's your fault. You're now responsible for how you feel in your day. And then the freedom from that is you're not dependent on other people for how you feel. And they can do all sorts of things and you just don't have to be bothered by it. Now, it says, a burst of temper. Anybody ever have that? I don't know. It's AA, probably not here. Could spoil a day. A well-nursed grudge. Anybody have well-nursed grudges? Remember, we give them safe harbor. We put them in a protective place. Miserably ineffective. Nor were we ever skillful in separating justified from justified anger. As we saw it, our wrath was always justified. Anger, that occasional luxury of more balanced people, could keep us on emotional jag indefinitely. Now, who wants to be there? What's the point of being sober? And how can you be service to God and others if you're in emotional jag? And then it says they lead straight to the bottle. Most people drink in AA because they get back into self. They get angry. The first thing they stop doing is come to the meetings. They stop doing the prayer, the meditation. They get back in self, and then they have no defense against their emotions. Other kind of disturbances, jealousy, envy, self-pity, or hurt pride, did the same thing. So a spot check inventory taken in the midst of such disturbances can be a very great help in quieting stormy emotions. Anybody ever get stormy emotions? Yeah, we want to quiet them. We don't want to feed them. It says to say spot check finds its chief application in situations which arise in each day's march. The consideration of long-standing difficulties better be postponed when you set aside. But if you have the same thing that's disturbing you all the time, you need to inventory it, right? You need to discuss it with someone. You need to go through it. The quick inventory is aimed at our daily ups and downs. You know, they cut me off at work. You go to the food store and you've got 8 items and you're in the 13 item line and somebody's got a full thing with coupons in front of you. You know, these things that God put, these are all God shots, you know, these things that happen to us. But remember, we pole vault over mouse turds. Anybody ever heard that?
Yes.
Yeah, we make a mouse turd and we got a pole vault over it because we build it up into this huge thing. But then when we look at it, we see it's just a little mouse turd. And we were trying to pole vault over it. So really, that's what the 10th step is all about. You take something that you built into this huge thing, it's just a little mouse turn. You just step right over it. It says, now here's the key. This has really helped me. Knowing that when I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me. And then here's the other thing that's really helped me. In these situations, I need self-restraint. Now think about that. I need to restrain myself. From what? From reacting. And I can't do that without God. So this is where God comes into this step. I see it. I see that I'm starting to get bothered. And then I say, God, help me. And I stop and I restrain me from reacting. And that's the power of God. Now, if you don't use God, he won't help you. But you have the ability to have self-restraint with God. You don't have to react in a negative way anymore. And I don't like it when I do that. Anybody still do it? I say, gee, why'd you do that? Why'd you get upset? And so I don't like that. So I really try not to get off the balance. I'll get irritated, but I try to stop. Especially fear. I feel fear is just a complete waste of time anymore. And I really try to just say, complete waste of time. Now, what they're trying to get at is that if you work the steps for a long time, you see all these things, but you let it, like somebody says, you let the train go through the station. You don't let it stop in here and get on board. You say, oh, I'm not going to get on that train. I'm going to let it go by. Now, you can't do that if you haven't worked the steps and if you're not in prayer and meditation and trying to seek God. But God will say, let that train go, Michael. Let it go. Let it go. But you'll say, I want to get back on it. No, no, let it go, Michael. And then before you know it, it's far and you can't recapture it again. It gives you time. So I want to do self-restraint. And then here's the other thing. So first I have to pause, which is a form of self-restraint. And then I need an honest analysis of what is involved. That's where we use other people's. And an honest analysis doesn't mean not my analysis. And a lot of times you'll have to call somebody and you'll tell them about a situation and they may help you see it completely different. But you can't see it. It's not easy for us to see. And so that's why we have sponsors, we have people we call. Sharing at meetings isn't always the best because you get a lot of alcoholics giving you advice about your situation and they don't know all the facts. So you have to really talk to someone. Sandy Beach gives the best example, you know, when he's the boss is yelling at him and telling him, he did this project. And the boss looks at it, throws it in the trash can, and he storms into his office. So he goes, he's all upset, right? So he had a sponsor, so he gave him a 911 text, which was their signal. He says, I got to talk to you. You know, I worked on this project, and all I did was take it, throw it in the trash can, close the door. So the sponsor says, well, maybe it was a pretty crappy report, right? But he said, maybe the boss's family's sick, and maybe there's something going on in his life, and he's bothered, and he just threw it in the trash can. So he says, all that happened was he threw it in the trash can, and then how you react to it. And so you could go later and ask the boss, knock on the door and say, can I do anything better? Can I change something? And so you don't have to react, even though it seems so unfair. And so I have a few people I can 911, and we should all have, you always should have somebody you can call when you're really getting worked up. A willingness to admit when the fault is ours, and an equal willingness to forgive. So it's very simple in the 10th step. You get disturbed, you say there's something wrong with me, you pause and say I'm going to restrain myself from reacting, I'm going to call someone and get an honest analysis of what's involved, and I have a willingness to admit when I'm wrong, and the other thing is forgive. So either you make amends right away or you forgive. Doesn't mean you excuse, but you forgive. And then you go on. Now, I don't know about you, but this has really helped me a lot. And so he says his first objective is development of self-restraint. It carries a top priority. Because when we speak, act hastily or rashly, the ability to be fair-minded, tolerant, evaporates on the spot. Anybody have an unkind tirade? or willful snap judging can ruin our relationship with another person for a whole day or maybe a year. The best place to practice this may be at home, I suggest it. Just keep your mouth shut. Just say, okay, I'm not going to react. It's okay. And then say the prayers and then see it differently so you don't react. It really helps with relationships. And it says, nothing pays like restraint of tongue and pen. Because remember, like Chuck C. says, we're all God's kids. We all have our personalities. You know, we all have our way. And we have to accept everybody and everything. He says these are emotional booby traps baited with pride and vengefulness. And we want to sidestep the traps. And it says when we're tempted by the bait, we should train ourselves to step back and think. Well, just stepping back is a major thing for an alcoholic. And then thinking and asking God to help my thinking. For we can neither think nor act a good purpose until the habit of self-restraint has become automatic. So what I think he's telling me is that whenever I see a situation, anything that's making me uncomfortable or bothered, I have to stop. I have to stop and just say, I'm not going to react. What's really happening? God, help me see it differently. Pause, ask for his direction. And so the more I do that, the better my day is. And so you're not wasting a lot of time. We're going to read on resentment and how it's, we see how they were futile and a waste of time and how much time we spent on it. So you don't want to waste your day stewing about something that happened at 9 o'clock and you're ruining your whole day and you're acting like a total you-know-what. And then you're creating more problems. And by the time you get to the end of the day, you say, that's the worst day I've ever had. And you could have stopped at 9 o'clock and just paused and asked God. So this is a powerful step. Now, for people who are new, you're saying, well, I'm not the 10th step. But you have this problem. You live in the world. So I suggest you find the sponsor, get the book, work steps 4 through 9 as quick as you can. And when you learn, when you're starting 4 through 9, you're going to start learning spiritual principles that you can start applying right away. So step 10, you really can start working as soon as you start on step 4. Because when you start getting disturbed for the day, you put that on your resentment list. You see, if it's fear, you put it on the fear list. So I hope this was helpful. This is good stuff. So next week, we're going to read the Recovered Promises on page 84 and 85. And then we're going to look at the God's vision for us each day. And then we'll finish step 10.